Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, welcome along to the very first episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. I'm Sean Dixon, and over the next few weeks, I'm going to bring you a weekly interview talking to some of the most interesting runners in the UK. Before I start that, I should apologise for that awful intro track. However, I am aiming for a Krypton Factor slash Fresh Prince of Bel-Air vibe, so I think I am currently nailing it. Now, other than rubbish 90s cultural references, what can you expect from the Let's Get Running podcast? Well, I wanted to bring a different perspective. A lot of the coverage in the mainstream media centres on drugs, which is fairly depressing, and a lot of the other reporting tends to focus on running as a challenge, so 400 marathons in 400 days or running 24 hours on a treadmill. And though these things are interesting, I don't think we can learn that much from these endeavours. So what I wanted to do was take a look at some of the top athletes in the UK and show they're not all that different to us. They work full-time jobs, they look after their families, and looking at their training and their nutrition and their racing habits, we can actually learn a lot for ourselves. So kind of the advice and the hints and tips we can pick up from these interviews will hopefully enable you to run faster in your next race. So great, let's get on with the show.
For our first interview this week, we'll be talking to Great Britain marathon runner, Comrade 7 placer, and current ultra and mountain trail marathon runner, Holly Rush. I think it's interesting to start sort of at the beginning of your kind of running journey and look at how you got into running athletics and distance running. Kind of what was the trigger point for you? What did you, how did you start this kind of incredible journey off?
I've been thinking about this, of how I actually started, but it was purely, I went to watch London Marathon because I was in London, I was working before I went to university. I just watched it and I just saw these people doing this crazy thing and I just, for some reason, thought I'll give it a bash next year. Seriously never ran before, not at all, not ran as a kid, yeah. Nothing. I didn't even run, I tried to get out of it at school as much as possible. It's all a new thing for me, but so I just said I'm going to do it next year. And signed up with a charity, and because I had to raise some extortionate amount of money, I couldn't really get out of it. So I turned up the next year dressed in inappropriate clothing and gave it a bash. And that's where it started, really.
And how did that go, that first marathon? Did you kind of, how did you get started? Did you just print a couple out off the internet, or did you?
No. I don't think the internet was around then. No, it went all right. I mean, the charity that I did it for, they put on some little days where we all got together and did a run around Battersea Park or something. And I entered Bath Half. That was my first race because that was my local one. And then I sort of rocked up on the day and just thought, I'd run a half marathon. That's the furthest I'd ran, I think. Wow. So I just rocked up and thought, well, I'm just going to give it a go. And if I can try and run the whole way, that'd be excellent. Well, I say run, you know, like go faster than walk. And, you know, if I can get to the finish in one piece, that'd be great. And basically, that's what I did. The problem was the weather was horrendous. It peed down with rain the whole time. And because I was wearing cotton throughout and rugby socks, I got some serious chafing. But as you know, you don't really realise it until you finish. But, so yeah, that's how it all started, really.
And it didn't put you in off at all?
No, that was the weird thing. Because I remember finishing and something must have clicked in my head because I thought, actually, that wasn't that bad. And I guess it was really nice that my family were there at the end. And I think they all thought, okay, she's done it now. She'll go and do something else. But I carried on because I joined a gym as well as train. I didn't really like running outside. I think I was a bit embarrassed. So I just continued training in the gym a bit more. And that's and it went on from there. But the next year I did the marathon, I'd improved significantly. I'd done a lot more training. And then actually I broke my foot the following year. And actually after that, my training took a back seat and I was I was at university, I finished university, and then I had to go into the real world and get a proper job. And that's when I sort of, I didn't really continue with the running so much, I just dabbled a bit. And it wasn't until I moved back to Bath that I took it up again properly.
And what was that trigger in Bath? What kind of got you back into it?
Well, I'd always worked in the fitness industry, although my degree had nothing to do with fitness. I'd always continued because I did sort of enjoy that, you know, being active. I got a job as a managing a health club, and it was very close to Bath University. And I turned up and I joined the Bath Running Club, and I did the marathon, and I think I ran about 3:06 or something.
And this is London again.
Yeah, this is London, and yeah, I think a few people said to me, oh, you should go and join Bath and you should go and maybe think about getting some advice. Because I still hadn't really wasn't doing anything. It was, you know, printing stuff off the internet by then.
Because 3:06 is still, that's a decent time for the average runner.
Yeah, it is. I knew that every time I was always getting, like, the championship time so I could have a decent start at London. So I sort of kept on doing that. And then someone gave me a number of a guy at the university who's a coach. So I called him. I've been training for Berlin and I printed out the Runner's World training. I followed that a little bit for a sub 3 hour because I thought maybe I should do a sub 3 hour and then that'll be it. That's fine. I met up with this guy. He said to me, okay, yeah, well, you do Berlin and we'll talk about it afterwards. So I went to Berlin and I ran my gun time was 2:59. My chip time 2:57 because I got caught short in the toilets. So I had to jump over the barriers. So when I ran the 2:59, it was like, I was so over the moon. I was just like, well, that's it. I've done it now. You know, that'll do. And then I came back and then it was from there, really. It was about 10 years ago. And then I started training properly. I mean, I'd never probably been on a track or anything. And then I went back and worked with this coach.
And how did sort of the training change? And you did a lot more kind of quality stuff than you'd previously
done.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd never really been on a track per se. So I got on the track and did some structured sessions. I started doing drills, sort of longer tempo runs, which I'd not really done, and just increased my mileage really as well. Eventually, I started doing some double days and things like that. But, you know, so from working, starting being coached and doing proper training, that was in the January I started that. Then I went to London that April and I ran 2:48. So it was quite a big jump. It was like, 11 minutes within 5 months. I remember thinking, bloody hell, I never expected that. I really had no idea what time I was going to run. And I've got pictures of me afterwards. I'm sort of high-fiving people and jumping around. I'm so excited. You just think, I wonder what I could have run if I'd actually brought my finger out. It was such a massive jump up that I didn't, you know, I was just over the moon, really.
And from that point, did you start to think then, I can take this more seriously and I can kind of make more of a career from this?
I think the thing was, and I guess I still feel this way, that I never think of myself as, like people say, oh, you're an elite runner or something, where I was an elite runner. I still find it really hard to accept that because I started off as a fun runner and I still believe that, you know, I think that everyone can probably run faster than they think. It's just about changing your training or just committing to and perhaps a more of a structured plan and committing to, you know, to something more if you really want it. And I think that's what I did. I mean, I obviously have some genetic as an endurance runner, and I don't know where that's come from. But, you know, my rest of my family don't run or anything like that. I just think I'm just bloody-minded and I'm happy, you know, I'll do the training. And I've obviously got a good endurance base.
And, I mean, I think the mental side of running plays a massive role. Mm. And a lot of, you know, bloody mindedness, I think, is a pretty key skill, really, just to get out there and hit those miles and kind of rack up the training. Mm. Before racing, now, obviously, you said you still feel you're kind of more of a fun runner. Do you get nervous? Has your mentality changed going into all these different races? Or are you just doing it kind of because you feel you want to discover new things and see new places?
I think with the ultras, I don't get me wrong, I get nervous, but I don't think I've got as nervous as, well, even in marathons to a certain extent, if the training's gone well, you should line up and feel, you know, I've just got to run at this pace and, you know, control the controllables. That's what my husband always says. You know, obviously if the weather's crap or, you know, things have changed, you can just only do what you can do. And I think with the ultras as well, it's such a long time you could potentially be out there for. You cannot waste your nerves to start with. You have to just believe you can do it. And there's going to be some real rough patches, like there is in a marathon, but there's some real rough patches, but quite often you do work through them. Well, you do work through most of the time and you'll get lots of rough patches. And it's knowing to when to not throw the towel in. You know, if it's really, really bad and there's a real problem, then you know, then obviously it's out. But you have to, it's very different with a marathon. It's a different feeling to running ultras. I mean, ultras, you're not redlining, obviously. You've got to be in control the whole time. You should be lining in a marathon the whole time, but you've got to be on the edge, you know? Whereas in an ultra, you have to be really conservative. You have to know your body and you have to eat and you have to drink.
What made you then go, because obviously you had a lot of success at marathon. You went to the European Championships.
Yeah.
And you were 18th there and obviously went to Delhi.
Yeah, Commonwealth Games, yeah.
Commonwealth Games. What made you then think, I'm kind of going to change direction from what I'm doing and go to these mountains and ultra marathon races?
Well, I'd just done so many marathons at around the same pace, the same time. Mm. I mean, if you look at my power of 10, I think I've got 5 or 6 marathons that are within 20 seconds of each other. They're all over the world. They're in different conditions. They're at different times of the year. And I just still ran the same time. Now, some people could say it's a mental block or something. But after the Commonwealth Games, that year had been really long. I'd done London. That was a qualifying race. I qualified, went to the Europeans, which was a dream come true to wear a GB vest and be part of the team. Win a medal for the team, which was amazing. And then 10 weeks later, we went to Delhi to run in really tough conditions, with no one on the course because it was a lockdown. I really struggled with that mentally. I was exhausted by then, but I think we all were, because a lot of us, we'd all been to the Europeans and the marathons. We'd ran 3 marathons in the space of like 4 months, like at a high level.
Wow.
And then after that, I was just a little bit, okay, where do I go from here? And then I went and did Houston, I think, in the January. And again, I think I didn't even wear a watch. I thought, I'm going to try and again run a PB. I came around the corner and the clock was ticking, 2:36. Click, 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 click. And then it clicked, and I think it was like 5 seconds outside my PB. And I just thought, all my toenails have been blown off because it's on concrete in America, which is really tough. And I finished, and I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can keep doing this. I continued, and then I remember just one particular night I was on the track. Tuesday night, always on the track, as you do. Started out my session, and it was just something I just thought, I can't do this at the moment. And I actually stopped and took my shoes off and I walked back to the cafe and I was just like, do you know what? I just need to do something different for a little bit. That was pretty serious for me to do that, because I will always do my training. And I just thought, I just don't know if I want to keep doing this. I'm losing why I'm doing this. And I always ran because I loved running and it was just about the process of running. It wasn't always about competing and times. So when I went back, I don't know what happened. Someone tweeted something on Twitter about a race in Nepal, and I just, before I knew it, I'd hit enter and bought some tickets. And there I was. I was gone from like a roadrunner, and I went out to Nepal to run in the Himalayas, and then that changed it. And then I came back and entered Comrades.
And you're back off again to Nepal?
Yeah, I'm going shortly. Friday, actually, back to Mustang. It's in the north of Nepal. So I'm going up there. It's sort of like a training camp for me, really, because again, I've had a bit of an injury and I'm coming back from that. And I've got some big mountain races this year. So I thought, well, I'll go out there. I know all the guys out there and I love it there. And I always find I train really well at very high altitude. So that's what I'm going to do, yeah.
And what was, back when you were marathoning, what was kind of a typical week's training?
So yeah, it was Tuesday on the track, sort of 10K sessions. And then Wednesday, sort of medium long run. Thursday, maybe some tempo sort of run. Saturday, I might do sort of a hilly fartlek, and then Sunday, a long run. And the rest of it is easy miles all in between.
So what kind of volume were you doing for marathon running?
I was doing probably anything between 90. I think the most I got to was 110, but I would say probably around 90 to 100.
And was that okay with the job? Were you working full-time?
No, it was completely crazy. I mean, I went from running, I don't know how many, 40 miles a week to trying to run. I was probably running, trying to get up to about 80, 85 when I was working. And being a manager of a health club, it was a part of the hotel as well. And I also did duty manager work in the hotel. So quite often I'd finish my shift and then I'd go over to the hotel and work till about 1 o'clock. And then I might have to be back at work in the morning for 6 a.m. And, you know, I was able to train a little bit on treadmills. Well, I did quite a lot of training on treadmills because that's the only way I could get it in. But, you know, I was finding myself running the treadmills at 5 a.m. and it just was like, I can't do this. This is mad. And that's when I gave up the job and I actually took a part-time job. And then for a while, I actually went full-time. I managed to get a sponsor and I went full-time for a while. But actually, yeah. I found that really hard. Full-time, I didn't like it.
The boredom.
Yeah, and I just was like waiting around for the next training session. It was actually depressing.
And particularly, I guess, if you're not running, you're unwell or you're injured and that sort of thing.
Well, I think the thing is I think people make the mistake when they go full time. They think they should train more, and it's not about that. It's about recovering more. It's like being really savvy with your recovery and everything else. And that's what I struggled to do. I'm not very good at sitting down or lying down or sleeping in the day. I can't really do it. I'm very, you know, ants in my pants. So it wasn't the best scenario, and I would just sort of sit around thinking, oh, I've got to go out again. Whereas, you know, the job I had wasn't good either. I mean, I think there's a good alternative, which I guess that's what I do now.
And how has that training changed now?
The training, yeah, it changed quite a lot. I think mainly because I changed the coach that I got in contact with in Bath, actually, I ended up marrying because it was just easier to be married. We spent a lot of time together. when I came back from Nepal, actually, it was really difficult being married to your coach. I found it very hard to separate coach, athlete, and so did he. Even though we really tried, it was getting really difficult. Even though Martin was brilliant, he brought me on so much. But I decided when I came back from Nepal that needs to change. And that's when I took the ultras sort of tact and I contacted my new coach who was happy to work with me. And so therefore my training did change quite a lot, actually. The main thing for me was the training. Now I've been with Alan, it's very sort of organic. So before, Martin would write my training out like weeks in advance, and I would stress about that. I mean, I don't know if it's, I think it's quite a female thing, but if it was written down that on tomorrow I have to run 10 by a K at this pace and I have to do it no matter what the weather is or how I feel, I have to do it, it's written on the paper. Whereas Alan doesn't do that. I mean, literally, I won't know my training until sometimes like 10 o'clock the night before. To start with, that really stressed me out. But actually now, I love it. I know that I'll probably do a training. I'll do a session tomorrow, maybe. But I won't know what it is. Get told it, and then I get on with it. So I'm way more laid back about my training.
And is it based on kind of how you're... Do you kind of have a dialogue with him about how you're feeling? And
oh, yeah. I mean, Alan's very hot on communication. I have to speak to him sort of probably... Well, he likes to be, look, when I'm training hard every day, but maybe every other day, and he can just tell by the way I sound or if I meet up with him, the way I look or something, and he'll say, okay, yeah, we're going to do this tomorrow or you're going to do that tomorrow or we need to get a long run in. And there's no specific days for training sessions. It just happens. But it's normally 3 sessions a week, a good long run, but that long run might be sort of a session in itself. I mean, that's the other thing. My sessions for ultras, when I'm training for big ultras, are really long. So they're not going to be as fast, but they could be really long sessions, you know, volume of up to 20 miles.
There's like sort of specific pace work in there. And
yeah, so when I was doing Comrades, I was doing the uphill. So I had to get some really good long hills in. So I would do a couple of weeks before Comrades, I did one specific session, which was 50K. And within that, I did mile hill reps.
Wow. Where can you find hills like that?
Well, I live on the canal, the towpath, so I ran along the towpath to Bath, if anyone knows that area, and then it's basically a mile up the road to the university off the canal. So I was able to do that. I did, I think, 5 by a mile, and then I'd get back onto the flat and I did 2 minutes out fast, 2 minutes back fast. And I did that within a 50K run, and I didn't take any energy with me. I just took water. I was allowed to take one gel, and Alan was like, well, if you feel like you're going to fall in the canal, then you need to take it. But if you don't feel like you're falling in the canal, don't take it, because you need to be really fat adapted. I did that run and I got home without taking any gels. And I thought, yep, I'm ready now.
Yeah. And that was quite an experience. 7th place, wasn't it, at Comrades?
We went into it just thinking, right, we'll just do whatever. The other thing that I do, a lot of my training is also heart rate. Right. So for ultras, I know that I can sustain so many hours at this heart rate that if I go above that heart rate for a longer period of time, I'm not going to finish and I'm not going to. So with Comrades that year, it was all the heart rate until the last sort of 20K, which sounds crazy because I've like race for most people. But the last 20K was like, just run as hard as you can. But the rest of the time, I think my heart rate was, it was still pretty high, but it wasn't to go above a certain heart rate. So I think for that particular comrades, it was an experiment. I think if I went back now, it would be different.
Do you have an intention to go back? Would you like to?
I had an intention to go back, but it's never sort of happened. I don't know. We'll see. My intention was always to go to Two Oceans, but I've been, every time I go back to go to Two Oceans, I've had an injury.
And you kind of touched on kind of needing to be fat adapted for the ultra running. Do you pay a lot of attention to your diet? And I was going to obviously, I've looked through your blog, and your relationship with food has played a big role in your development as an athlete.
Yeah.
So how do you feel now? What's your relationship like with food? And do you have advice for people sort of looking to run ultra marathons? And
So for people who have read my blog and will be able to read that, I did have issues with food. Well, it's a really weird thing, issues, because fundamentally I love food. That's the thing. I love food. Yeah. I love cooking and I love eating. And unfortunately, before I started running, I had no issue with food at all. It really didn't even cross my mind what I was eating or when. I think because my body changed shape so significantly that I saw a relationship between eating or not eating, body and training and racing. And some parts of me wish that had never happened, because you never really get over sort of eating, disordered eating, I like to call it. I definitely don't have any problems with food now. What I don't like is the fact that I know the calorific value of everything I put in my mouth. I try not to let it affect me. I think if anything, I've probably gone the other way. I just eat whatever I want, whenever I want. I think because of that, I try and not restrict myself like I did. I am very conscious of eating good food. And with the ultras, I really wanted to become fat adapted and, well, more able to burn fat for long periods of time, because I think that's quite important.
And what does that look like? How do you kind of prepare for that?
Well, I do a lot of athletes do it already and they don't realise they're doing it. So I'll do runs in the morning without fuel, just like a cup of tea or coffee or something. And I can do that quite a number of hours. But so yesterday I ran for like 2 hours or something. I won't have any breakfast before and I'll be fine with that. If I'm doing something faster, then I will have some food before that. And that would just be a normal breakfast. But I just try and incorporate more protein and fat into my diet and reduce the carbohydrate at times. The other thing that I do, think is really important, because I have had some health issues, and I think it's been to do with having too low a carbohydrate at times, is that you need to really pay attention to your recovery and you need to periodize your lower carbohydrate intake. So therefore, if you're doing speed sessions, you need to have some carbohydrate, good carbohydrates. And therefore, and then also after comrades and after these big races, I go back to eating carbohydrate when I want. Because I think long periods of time, especially for females, without carbohydrate can really mess with your hormones. You don't want to do any long-term damage, which I think you can. You can end up putting yourself into a overtraining cycle. So your endocrine system's really fatigued as well, and your hormones are all over the place, and you, if you push that too far, I think you probably can't ever come back from it. There's quite a few ultra runners in the States that this has happened to, and some people are fine, but I personally think that this ketosis sort of diet and stuff that a lot of ultra runners and some athletes are looking at, I don't think it's the right thing. I think we're everything in moderation is the way forward. But I do think some people are more, I think I am naturally a much better fat burner than a carbohydrate burner. If you look at my husband, he's basically a sugar and carbohydrate monster. And I don't think he'd ever change that. I work better not having that amount, but I do still have carbohydrate.
Is there anything you reward yourself with after a big race or anything?
I'm really lucky that I live opposite a really good pub.
Right, okay.
Barge Inn, a bit of advertising for the Barge. And they do really good homemade food. I love a pie. And I love
the... I think your Skype photo was you eating a massive...
Oh, yeah, well, that's pork pie. Now, I am quite well known in social media and stuff for pork pies. That's one of my fuels that I use in races now. I eat pork pies. I can run at 8-minute miling and eat a pork pie. I think it's pretty cool. So I would have a pie and I really like a pint of bitter or something. And maybe apple crumble afterwards would be nice with custard.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, it's got to be custard.
So it's a lot of carbohydrate.
I've got the marathon coming up and I'm just dreaming about eating a whole Christmas cake on my own.
Oh, it's my God, I love Christmas cake.
Oh, it's got to have loads of marzipan.
Yeah, me too. Exactly. I've seen marzipan out of the packet. Yeah.
So this year, on the 27th of April, if you're wondering where I am, I'm going to darken room eating a big bit of Christmas cake on my own.
On your own.
Yeah. It's like looking at your training at the moment. Obviously, you've gone through a few injuries and illnesses last year. If there's one thing change about your training, your preparation, kind of what would it be?
Yeah, I think as you get older, because I'm not getting any younger now, I think I'm on that downward trajectory. I think that I have to pay a lot more attention to the strength and conditioning. It's not even strength; it's like body weight work, and I try and spend some time doing stuff like that. It's stuff that we all neglect, and it's not about lifting massive weights, although I do lift weights. You know, it's all the other little bits and bobs. It's keeping yourself loose. And I wish now that I'd done a lot more stretching and maybe yoga when I was a bit younger. At the time, I remember when I worked in the fitness industry, I was like, oh, don't stretch. It's really bad for you. Overstretching is bad for you, I think, because I have overstretched before. But I think I would definitely spend more time doing that sort of stuff. And yeah, just recovery. It's really important to recover. My problem is I can't sit still. I think when you go on training camps, that's when you do all of this stuff, but you just do it for like a week. I realise that's what all the Kenyans do and the top athletes do, because they just rest. I would say my dog, he's the perfect athlete. He goes running in the morning with me. He sleeps all day, eats, goes for a run again in the evening, then he goes to bed.
Perfect.
So yeah.
We should all be following the dog.
Yeah, I would just, be more dog, as they say.
Yeah. And I've got like three questions to ask. I'm going to try and ask everyone that appears in the podcast. And the first one is, if you could only run in one make and model of shoe for the rest of your life, what it would be? So it can't just be an ASICS. It's got to be a specific make and model.
Well, it's different for me because I'm an ASICS ambassador, which is great.
I see.
And they're brilliant.
Okay.
So I'd have to say an ASICS shoe, obviously. But I would say it would have to be the DS Racer. Because that's the other thing, I don't like big, lumpy, heavy shoes. I've always run in quite light shoes. I can train in racing shoes the whole time. So it would be those. Although, actually, they used to make a shoe, which I love, when I first started running, my first proper, fast marathons, and that was the Tiger Paw. Now, I don't know if anyone listening to this who sort of was around running in the 90s, they might remember that. It was a very white shoe, and that was a brilliant shoe. But as you all know, all shoe companies, as soon as you have a nice shoe, they stop it.
Yeah, make something else.
Yeah.
Find something, some new technology to whack on the back or something.
Yeah, exactly. Let's mess about with it and screw everyone over.
And if you had sort of one book, article, film or podcast you'd recommend to people, it doesn't have to be a running one, what would that be?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. So my favourite podcast at the moment is Ultra Runner Podcast, and it's American. And that's a great podcast. I love it. They have interview really interesting people that you might not have, never have heard of. And they're really into home brewing and stuff like that. So I love that. One of my favourite books is Birdsong. And then my favourite film of all time, again, it's pretty old school, is The Princess Bride. I don't know if anyone... it's really cheesy, but I love it.
Yeah. And what do you think is, in your opinion, the greatest single running performance in history?
Right, well, I think greatest running performance in my lifetime, and that I was lucky to see, and I just thought it was awesome, and I think he's such an awesome, humble guy, was David Rudisha at the 2012 Olympics when he ran the 800 metres in like 1:40.
New world record, wasn't
it? Yeah, new world record. And it was just awesome to watch. And I was lucky that I'd seen Mo and I'd seen Jess Ennis. I'd seen them all. But to watch him run, and he's so graceful. Yeah, I thought that was amazing. That was the standout performance, I thought, for the Olympics. So, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, and he's such a lovely guy. Well, he looks a lovely guy.
Yeah, comes across well
he
anyway.
He does, doesn't he? He's got a lovely smile, so we like that.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, well, thanks for your time, Ollie. Good luck with Nepal, and hopefully the race. You're racing again in Dolomites pretty soon, is that right?
Yeah, I've got the Dolomites in June. That's a 120k mountain race. So, yeah, it's going to be my longest race to date. So I think the aim is to finish it in one piece.
That's it. And people can follow you on your blog. What's the
My blog is Holly Rush at WordPress, I think. You might have to put something on the website. And then
I'll do that.
My Twitter is Rush by Nature.
So, we'll put links up on the website.
Yeah, as long as you don't mind a lot of dog photos, you'll be all right.
Excellent. Nice one, Holly.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.